Low interest rates and why investors have nowhere to go but the stock market. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishour, in for David Brancaccio. Fed Chair Jerome Powell tomorrow is expected to announce that the Fed is rethinking its approach to inflation a bit. It might let inflation get higher than normal in the future, which means that the Fed won't be that interested in putting the brakes on the economy anytime soon. That's what it would normally do to fight inflation. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
If the Federal Reserve is prepared to tolerate a higher level of inflation for a long period of time, what does that mean for markets?
It means that interest rates are going to stay low and right now at zero. The Fed's indicated that they really have no interest in increasing interest rates. Chairman Powell is going to speak again tomorrow, and I think the market expects that message to continue and to continue for quite some time. That means that investors have nowhere to go but the stock market. When interest rates are at zero, fixed income doesn't provide any yield at all, and investors are looking for a return. That pushes them into the stock market and is one of the reasons that we see so much strength in stock market levels right now.
Well, that actually explains a lot. Another item we're looking at is durable goods orders. They rose 11% in July. Durable goods being, you know, things that don't wear out very easily. How important is that?
That's a really good concrete sign that things are getting better in certain sectors. Durable goods are meant to last at least 3 years. And the July number showed an increase of over 11%. That's really strong, particularly on top of a number in June where it was almost up 8%. Now, economists did not think the number would be that high. And even if you exclude things that could be lumpy, like aircraft and military equipment, that's still ahead of economists' estimates, with durable goods rising 2%. That's a good sign for investors and the economy because factory orders are coming back. They're not where they were pre-corona, but they're getting closer.
Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Speakers at the Republican National Convention last night held up the president's phase one trade deal with China as a major accomplishment. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo lauded it in his convention speech. U.S. and Chinese officials made a point of having a phone call Monday night to announce their commitment to the deal. But is the agreement actually functioning as promised? Chad Bown is senior fellow at the Peterson Institute and has been tracking that agreement. Good morning, Chad.
Hi, Sabri.
So we had even just yesterday U.S. and Chinese officials say, you know, this trade deal is alive and well. You have the data on how it's going. How is it actually working out?
Well, I think it's good news, bad news. The good news is there is still a trade deal in effect. So we've, you know, stopped imposing tariffs on each other. But the tougher news is that they had set these really large targets for how much China was expected to buy in terms of U.S. exports over the next 2 years, 7 months through 2020. And, you know, we're only about 28% of the way through what they expected China to buy this year. So it's not looking good in terms of the targets.
It is called a phase one trade deal, meaning there are phases yet to reach. This trade deal, you know, is about how much China's buying from the U.S. It doesn't talk about intellectual property. It doesn't talk about a lot of other issues. When are those issues going to get dealt with?
So that's the big question. The Trump administration hasn't yet started negotiating on the really substantive issues with China that includes China's system of subsidies, its large state-owned enterprises, these big state-run companies that make it much less market-oriented than we might otherwise like it to be. None of those issues were tackled in phase one, and they've really yet to start talking about them at all in terms of the phase two.
Chad Baum, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks for having me.
Teva Pharmaceuticals, the world's largest generic drug maker, has been charged by the Justice Department in connection with an alleged industry-wide price-fixing scheme. It's accused of raising the prices of popular drugs. Marketplace's Jasmine Garst reports.
The Department of Justice says Teva colluded with competitors to increase prices for medications that treat high cholesterol and brain cancer, among other conditions. This is hardly the first of the company's recent legal and financial troubles. It has thousands of opioid lawsuits in the U.S., which it has agreed to settle, and is facing an antitrust probe by the European Commission. Teva's U.S. traded shares fell as much as 6% on Tuesday after reports that the government was planning to charge the company. Teva denies any wrongdoing. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
President Trump, as you may remember, recently issued an executive action that temporarily suspended payroll taxes for employees earning $100,000 or less. The legality and practicality of his executive memo is in dispute, and it hasn't been particularly popular on Capitol Hill. But the bigger worry among some economists is that any move toward lowering payroll taxes during a pandemic recession would put additional financial pressure on Social Security. David Brancaccio spoke about that with Marketplace senior economics contributor Chris Farrell.
Clearly, Trump did want to cut the payroll tax at least for a short period of time this fall.
Well, he's been consistent about that. But here's the crux of the worry. This is what economists are really afraid of. Cutting payroll taxes could move up that long anticipated date of the Social Security trust fund depletion by several years.
But that doesn't mean Social Security suddenly goes bankrupt and stops paying at that moment.
Yeah, but here's what it means. The depletion date, which was projected by the Social Security's trustees before the pandemic, they put it at 2035. And that marks the year when payroll tax revenue will only cover 79% of promised benefits. So now we have this high unemployment with the pandemic recession. Fewer people are paying their payroll taxes, the high business failure rate, particularly among small businesses, less money going into Social Security. So when you take this pandemic recession, if you combine that with a payroll tax cut, well, the date of the Social Security fiscal crisis could be moved up earlier.
By how much, though, you think?
Okay, so there's a range of estimates, but the Bipartisan Policy Center, they used the Great Recession of a dozen years ago as its baseline. So if the current downturn mirrors the Great Recession, Social Security's depletion date would move up by 6 years to 2029. Alicia Minow, she's director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. She calculates that if the recession causes payroll taxes to drop by 20% for 2 years, the depletion date would move up by 2 years. So if you add in payroll tax cuts to the pandemic recession, it's not good news for Social Security.
And it's also impossible to predict just how deep this pandemic recession is going to be, which will play out in these figures, right?
Exactly. I mean, these are projections, but here's what I take away from this. Reducing payroll taxes at this time is only going to undermine Social Security finances, and too many older Americans rely on their Social Security benefits to pay the bills.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
That was Marketplace Morning Report host David Brancaccio, and I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.